Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Hitler, then to Horvat at the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Canucks lose 4-3 in the shootout last night. Do pick up a point, though it felt like a point squandered last night. Felt much different than the point the Edmonton Oilers got last night, for that matter. Scott Rintoul, Mick Nizar. This is Canucks Central. You want in on the conversation? Subway text line 650-650. That was my perception coming out of last night. I think it's fair. Third period lead. Couldn't hold it. Shootout, one goal or one save away. Couldn't get it. Whereas in Edmonton, down 1-0 to the defending Eastern Conference champions. No McDavid, no Klefbom. That team found a way last night. Found a way to get a point.
Yeah, it's and look, I think that's the right and fair way to look at it. You know, third period comeback and all that, but when you have the game on your stick so many times, I don't even just mean in the shootout. Like, Louis Erickson has a chance to finish that game. You definitely have to look at that as a point lost. And they played well. You know, let's not overlook that part.
Yeah, that was the conflicting feeling coming out of that game. I said it to Hershey last hour, and I'm sure you'd agree. They play game in, game out like that. They're going to come away with 2 points most times.
But because it's in the sequence of events of, boy, they really wanted to win there. They really need to win, considering what's happened here in the last 2 weeks, how teams have slowly closed that gap between them and everyone else. Everyone's going to look at it and say, you kind of needed that one.
Well, and it's funny, isn't it? When things are going really well, your game doesn't always have to be in order for you to pick up wins. And when you're not getting the results, by and large, you got to get your game in order before some of those wins come. And most people who have been around this sport for a long time will tell you, they can smell the end of a winning streak coming and can also smell the same thing with a losing skid. And listen, the Canucks had won back-to-back games on Monday and Wednesday of last week, but a lot of people just look at the schedule and go, that's 6 losses in your last 8 all of a sudden. Now, go get a win against the Boston Bruins, and it's, you've picked up 7 of your last 10 points. Lose to the Boston Bruins on Saturday night, which is always a possibility when those two teams line up, and people are starting to clench just a little bit. There's a long way to go. You and I have been very, very steadfast on this.
Mm-hmm.
Just steel yourself, man. The real games are coming in a month.
Yes. Here's the thing, though. We've said this before in the past to a St. Louis team. We've used the term good loss, right? That was a good loss, and the performance last night was good. But we're at a stage in the season when you can't look for silver linings. Like, now you need the results.
No, but last night is one. You're right. Absolutely, you do. But Sunday's a lot more concerning. The 5-1 loss to the Anaheim Ducks is a lot more concerning. Last night falls to me in the context of, that's hockey. That's hockey for you. Sometimes you're going to play well and you're not going to win, and a puck's going to bounce in off your face. That is hockey.
Off your face, off your arms, off your hands, somehow it'll find its way.
That's just hockey.
Yeah.
Like, that one falls in that category as long as you do what you just talked about. Get results on the other side of it. And so last night, all of a sudden, becomes more about Saturday and Tuesday and Thursday and what happens on the start of that road trip.
Yeah, we are talking less about the Wednesday game is exactly what you're talking about, because of this, the way this has gone. That's where the concern comes from. Again, it's learning to become consistent. That's what they have to do. Can you piggyback yesterday's performance into Boston, into this road trip, which, you know, has its challenges? I don't think Montreal's an easy out by any stretch of the imagination. Toronto, obviously, we know their flaws, but let's not pretend that they don't have high powers to get it right sometimes. So you got to start steeling yourself, to steal a phrase you just used, to become more consistent. And I think, you know, certain players, you saw Tyler Toffoli yesterday, I thought did well enough in his debut, which is a tough spot to learn it all on the fly.
I thought he was good.
I thought he was good.
And the reason I say he was good, not because of the point, I thought he was really good in his own end.
Mm-hmm.
That's what impressed me most. And we talked about that yesterday, that this was one of the added benefits they could get with Tyler Toffoli, that yes, he's brought in to bump up the scoring in the top six, and he's an option on the power play, and that's where he's had success before. But this is also a player who has been coached in a certain manner and should be able to take care of all those little details that the Leafs are searching for right now. And quite frankly, some of the players on the Canucks are still searching for.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't learned yet because they haven't been through this. Tyler Toffoli's been through this. His play along the boards in his own end, the composure he showed when he'd retrieve the pucks in his defensive zone, either to push it back to the defenseman calmly or to know that he had a little time and space and to turn things up ice, that'll look great in that regard. And that will go a long way with the head coach here.
Yes. And you see how well that line worked together. And look, this is about Tyler Toffoli, just him, his defensive play, and how he fits in overall. But that line really worked, much in the same way the Lotto line really worked. And here's options now, right? We all, as soon as the trade happened, we linked Tanner Pearson and Toffoli together. Like, oh, those two to go perfect with Bo Horvat, that's fine. Look, because Brock Besser's out, Tyler Toffoli has an opportunity here to make that spot his home for the rest of the season because Brock Besser's out. And that's no slight on how Brock Besser's played. I've been a big fan of what he's done this season, but you know, I've been consistent on this. The opening 55 games of a season is not necessarily about, you know, finding chemistry, right? It's experimentation time. The last little bit is fine-tuning everything. And Brock Besser's just not around to be part of the fine-tuning for that top line. So if Tyler Toffoli finds a home there, I'm cool with leaving that as is. And Brock Besser's going to have to figure it out on the fly with Bo Horvat and Tanner Pearson.
So the Canucks get a point. They don't get two, but there are plenty of other storylines within that game as well. Toffoli has to be at the top of the list. It's debut. I do wonder if he cashes early, if he's not as amped up as he is to make that first impression beside mm-hmm. the side of the net. But we've seen him score before. Louis Erickson, on the other hand, I'm not sure he's going to score again after last night. That's what it felt like. It really did. We talked about mm-hmm. when does the leash run out? When does the good feel run out on that? It's run out, and it's run out for a yeah. while now. And last night was evidence of that again. He's there because they don't feel they have another option right now.
There was some defensive value to his game, but you're in a spot. At some point, you can't just rely on defense.
There was some defensive misgiving yes. to his game yesterday as well, and it resulted in a goal.
Yeah.
Him just not taking care of the little things, if I can.
Yes.
Getting the puck out of the zone.
It makes me wonder, like, is Zach MacEwen going to get a run? It was that the last of Louis Erickson? There was that moment in the second period where you're like, man, like, there's a little bit more. He had a chance for a kind of a one-on-one break and just doesn't receive a pass very well. Those offensive instincts, yeah, they just aren't there. And you can't just rely on your defensive game because what's going to happen? You can't be perfect on defense. You just can't. You're going to get got sometimes. And he did. And when you're not providing anything else, that's when it becomes an issue. And Brandon Sutter gets to jump up the lineup. We've talked about it. Is Adam Gaudette potential to jump up the lineup at some point? But yeah, they do need a scorer with that. And that's where the depth hurts.
Well, they could use a scorer. They could use someone who's just really diligent about the way he plays mm-hmm. the game. And that's part of Louis Erickson's problem. He doesn't, whether he's trying his hardest or not, he doesn't always look like it. And listen, when things were going well for that line and he was making it a better line, we saw visible proof that he can work harder.
Mm-hmm.
So now that is the standard that you have to live up to if you're going to stay in that
yep.
spot. And last night, he didn't do this. I'm not going to hang all of that on Louis Erickson last night. There's a couple of goals he should have scored, and there were some defensive misgivings. I'm with you. When does that line change? When does another winger come onto that line? If he had Tyler Motz try hard,
whew,
man, he works hard. You can say what you want. That guy plays the game hard, man. He gets after it.
He had a shift where he was doing it all by himself. Like, the play where he dives to break it up, he gets down low, breaks up a play. Yeah, no, it's fun and entertaining to watch Tyler Mott work. Again, we're not talking about the skill of, oh, what a great pass by Quinn Hughes, a sausage to Jay Beagle. We're talking about just how hard someone works. And Tyler Mott, that's contagious to the fans, and you want it to be contagious to the other guys in the lineup. And I don't know how you feel, because we've seen that framework of a defensive winger kind of work with Bo Horvat? In again, I'm not advocating for a long-term solution, but in a two-game run here, is that worth exploring?
He wouldn't be my first choice.
Nor mine, but it's...
That's down my options list.
He does bring something that it feels like others don't. And it might be that just that he's consistent and it's his speed, whatever it is, but he's energetic and he's entertaining and he's earned a spot and a chance to maybe have a run there, more so than some of the other guys who are definitely more talented.
It certainly helps their penalty kill as well.
Yes.
Getting him back on that PK unit makes a world of difference. Your thoughts on where the Canucks are after last night's game and what lies ahead, you can get in Subway text message inbox 650-650. Two great offensive stories coming out last night, obviously, were JT Miller and Quinn Hughes. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with JT Miller. We always start with Quinn Hughes.
24 goals. That is a career high. There are 22 games to go in the regular season. This is where you knock on wood and talk about health and hope that it's going to be there the rest of the way. It's already a career year from a goal-scoring standpoint. The points are going to be a career year. He is a no-brainer 30-goal scorer as long as he stays healthy. How much has he exceeded your expectation by, I suppose, is the only question to ask now.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of the trade. Never did I think 80 points was a potential. Like 80 points, that's on the table for him to get 80 points. I thought maybe somewhere in the 65 range made sense, and he's going to clip that, what, by next week? That's just the trend he's on. He's so good. He needs to shoot more. That's the one thing I'd say. I wish he shot a bit more. I think that was a complaint even Steven Stamkos had in Tampa Bay. It's like, you got a great shot. Shoot more. And you see how clever he is with the tip play. But he's got a shot that, because he's so selfless, he almost tries to set guys up more. Like, he's a goal scorer in his own right.
Well, and he's capable of doing it. Mm-hmm. That's the other part of it. He is capable of setting more guys up. And I think as we go on, there are certain games where he feels, I need to shoot more. But you're right. From game to game, it's not that trigger-first mentality. Hey, given the creative player that he plays with most nights, who just seemed to have a little bit of trouble handling the puck last night, like Pettersson played well. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say he had a great game. He just had a little trouble handling the puck last night, which is rare for him. But the puck was bouncing a little bit for everybody, wasn't it?
Yeah, it did feel that way.
I mean, one of those games.
It's going off people's faces to get in.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It went off Troy Stetcher. He's had a bad couple of games, luck-wise.
Back-to-back games?
Sometimes it happens.
Yeah. What else are we supposed to do? Not try to protect the net? Not go in front of the net?
Then there is Quinn Hughes. I don't know if that's the best highlight he has this year. Probably not. But as far as his assists go, is it in the top three? Is it in the top five? The patience he showed on that play when Jay Beagle opens the scoring from a Canucks perspective last night. He's like a 10-year vet.
Just to bait the defender and all that. Yeah, no, he's...
Nice play by Mott to get him the puck.
Yes. Man.
Really nice play. Sacrificed the body.
Tyler Mott, yeah.
He sacrificed the body.
Just did just enough to make the play. And Quinn Hughes, look, I think I might be done waiting for a rookie wall. It's so few games now.
27 minutes last night.
Yeah. But it's so few games now that, like, the concern just gets mitigated that we're down to a spot of what? 20 games here? 22 games? The wall might hit you in the playoffs, and that would suck, but you got what you wanted this year. Like, he's been phenomenal, and he's getting stronger, as you mentioned. 27 minutes. This is it, like, every time he comes on the ice, it just, if you can feel a collective sigh of relief in the crowd.
He's human, so he gets tired, but there are times when I wonder. There was a shift last night, Bick. I don't have it in front of me, but he played a long shift. There was a shift where they had to get off the ice, and he was part of the defense pairing that was out of there. And yet the puck went down to the offensive end. And he ended up with the puck on the right side. And all of a sudden, at the end of a shift where I thought, okay, he's going to lay this puck off so he can get to the bench, do the responsible thing. All of a sudden, he kicked it into this gear and scooted over to the left side of the offensive zone. And I said, how does he have the energy to do that right now? And the only thing I could come up with is that he's such an efficient skater that time stands still for him in a certain regard. He's just so economical with his movement that he has gas in the tank where there shouldn't be gas in the tank for most NHL players.
I'm curious if that's why, that we haven't seen this wall, because of the way he moves. And quite frankly, the abuse he avoids because of his skating, that these tight circles that he's just able to dart away from guys. You know, he spent a lifetime just doing that on a rink, just perfecting that. So when an opportunity arises, when someone can pummel him into a boards, they're just eating glass. And he's just, okay, ho-hum, away I go. And you don't take that abuse. Does that minimize the chance that he could hit that rookie wall?
He's up to 47 points mm-hmm. now. The race between him and Makar is fascinating. Makar picks up 2 points for the Avs last night. Quinn Hughes says, well, I'll take two of my own. Thank you very much, and stays just ahead of him in that race. It's been fun.
I'm not sure if I even care about the rookie race anymore. Like, the defenseman race, to me, is what's fascinating. Just where they're going to rank in that, right? It's like, I know John Carlson's going to win it by a mile, but where Quinn Hughes, is he going to finish top three?
In scoring or in Norris conversation?
In scoring, right? Like, he could catch Victor Hedman easily. I don't know if he catches Yossi, but Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar could be top three, four, or could be 3 and 4 in defenseman scoring in the league.
That would be pretty crazy.
Yeah, and so, like, the rookie chase between those is fascinating, but they're chasing down Roman Yossi and Victor Hedman, those types of guys. He's 10 points away from Yossi. That might be too far a bridge to cross, but he's 2 behind Victor Hedman. He could absolutely get there for 3rd in the league. That's crazy, man. It's, you know, we've had this conversation. Who's making the bigger impact in their rookie years, Pettersson or Hughes? And, you know, we made the arguments that Pettersson didn't have the amount of talent he did in his rookie year. Quinn Hughes still has to execute with the talent around him. He's blowing you away every single night. Every single night.
Yeah, he's been incredible. There's no doubt about it, and it just feels like it's getting better.
Yeah.
When it should be weaning off a little bit.
And it still feels like they're scratching the surface of what's to come, right? Obviously, this is the rookie year, but it still feels like some meat is left on the bone on the power play. It still feels like they can learn more and will learn more, and that's what's scary. That's why we advocate, like, it's go time now when you talk about bigger picture stuff, because what these guys are doing is special. So you can't just punt decisions down the road. You've got to reward people that are special.
Hughes looking like a modern-day Scott Niedermeyer. That's Rob in Victoria. Brian Leetch is the comparison that often gets used. But yes, Corey Hirsch and I talked about that from a skating standpoint. I don't know if he'll ever be as thick as Scott Niedermeyer was, and he is smaller. But from a skating standpoint,
mm-hmm.
that's a pretty good comparison.
Much more, yeah. I was going to say, much more straight line speed feels like to Scott Niedermeyer, but that smoothness of just gliding across the ice, yeah, that's very much what Quinn Hughes feels like.
Hughes is one of the rare defensemen who doesn't get in position for the puck. He lets the puck get him into position, is one of the comments that comes in.
Interesting. Interesting. I mean, that's the thinking man's game, right? That you're always a constant step ahead and let the puck work for you. Hughes and Miller does a lot of that too. The smart players do more with less. And it feels like he's starting to do that. And look, it's exciting to, as he figures this out, how to manipulate players as well. And I should say, Pettersson had a great play yesterday along the wall too, of just knowing how to vary his speeds. Quinn Hughes is starting to do that as well. And Pettersson, like, these guys are really creative. It's not just straight line, let's just go, go, go. It's nuanced of how can I manipulate guys and get around them one-on-one outside of just using my hands and my skill.
You said it's go time.
Mm-hmm.
It's go time right now for the Vancouver Canucks, and go time happens to happen within rumor season.
Yeah.
That's where we are. It's rumor season right now around the National Hockey League. Wayne Simmonds is the rumor generating the most conversation around the Canucks right now. Do you feel as though it's jumped the shark a little bit now? What might have been a possibility before isn't going to happen, or do you still think it's a realistic possibility?
For Wayne Simmonds?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I still feel like it's a possibility, but you have to check the entirety of what's available. And we've had this conversation when it comes to Canucks players in the past at deadlines, that they were kind of secondary, tertiary pieces. They were viewed that way across the league. So no one's going to jump out on those guys first because, you know, what if something else falls in your lap? If a Wayne Simmons deal comes to fruition, I would expect it to be Sunday or Monday, right? Because if, let's say, in a world where the pieces you're talking about acquiring are players with term across the league, and I know Trocheck's name's come up a bit here in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, we can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, but if that was the scenario and you were exploring a Trocheck trade, the thing you don't want to do is muddy up your roster with a Wayne Simmons rental. Right? And you want to explore everything before making your decisions. And Wayne Simmons, while there's definitely some interest in him, where does he rank in relation to everyone else? I feel like Blake Coleman, Tyler Toffoli, all those guys, much higher up in the ranks of where how they would be coveted across the league.
Yeah, Wayne Simmons isn't the piece I would go after. And
yeah.
if the Canucks go through the trade deadline and Wayne Simmons isn't here and he's still a member of the New Jersey Devils, I'm not going to feel like, boy, they should have gone and gotten Wayne Simmons.
It's a luxury move, and it's one you circle back to. You find out what the price
maybe.
Is,
yeah.
And you come back to it and say, okay, I've done all my real shopping. We couldn't get this. I need to grab this.
Jason in Surrey sends this in. Canucks have a serious obsession with size, and it's worrying. If they trade for Simmons, add him to the list of heavy guys the Canucks have who can't skate. It's great to think you can dump pucks deep and get in on the forecheck, but if they can't get there, you're just giving away the puck and getting burned on transition. Canucks need to get faster to play Green system. Figure it out.
I agree with it. And look, I'm not an advocate for Wayne Simmons. I think there's better options, but it's relative to price. If it's a sixth round pick, or if there's bad money getting sent the other way and there's value in the deal, then okay, you can make the trade. But I'm not here saying paying high rental prices for Wayne Simmons. I think there's better solutions to what they're trying to do. And yeah, worrying about the size, you know how I feel about it. You can play bigger than you are. You don't necessarily need bigger guys to be the remedy to what you're talking about.
Vincent Trocheck's name has been out there in the last 24 to 48 hours, and it caught most of us by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Florida's looking for solutions, but we figured the solutions Florida's looking for are on their back end, and that why would you want to subtract from your center ice position? And maybe they won't. Maybe they're just gauging interest right now, but that came up on 31 Thoughts, and Elliot Friedman's talked about it in the last couple of days, and I don't even think Canucks fans connected any dots between him being available and a potential landing spot here, but we're in rumor season,
mm-hmm.
So if somebody's name is out there, people are going to mentally put packages together, and Vincent Trocheck, there are some who have started to visualize him in the Vancouver Canucks roster.
Does he strike you as a player? Okay. Let's just talk about the value of what he could bring, right? He should be a solid second-line center. Is that fair?
Yep.
And he's having a bad year. Now,
been hurt a little bit.
Yes. Now, when you're talking about where that shakes out into this roster, you know, going for it to some degree, where we want certain players to be. We want Elias Pettersson to be one of the top 10 centers in the league. You want Bo Horvat to be one of the top number two centers in the league. And on down the list, you want to slot players in elite spots, and that's when you're ready to go for it. If you bring in a Trocheck, he's probably playing, what, third line? Maybe he's a top six winger, somewhere in that. He's probably playing third line center. So you get one of the better third line centers in the league, much like how Kadri was a third line center in Toronto, Jordan Staal in Pittsburgh back in the day. Like, you can slot guys in certain areas and like, okay, wow, we're ready to make a push.
Yeah, we can debate whether if he was here right now in their current hierarchy, he'd be the second line
sure.
center or their third
but
line.
But either way,
I get the idea.
You have strong guys in strong positions no matter what. So there's value in doing that. It's all, again, it's all relative to cost. What are you doing to get there? And that age range is really interesting when you think of where Victor Trocheck is and you consider what it would cost.
He's 26.
Yeah. No, but it's not old.
No, I'm just letting people know who don't know what his age is. He's 26 years old. He's under contract for 2 years beyond this one at less than $5 million per.
And
now, offensively, his stats have not equated to value at that number the last 2 years. Now, last year he only played, 55 games? He's only played 53 this year. He's 35 points and 10 goals. But he was a 30-goal scorer a couple of years ago.
75-point guy. And he's been a fairly reliable 50-point guy in the past. So there's value to getting that style of player. And I think the name, should this ever come to fruition, which, look, I'm still skeptical it would, but I'm sure the name you'll hear is Adam Gaudette in relation to Victor Trocheck. Now, again, when you just look at the age range, are you willing to speed up what your third line center should look like by 2 years and say, hey, look, I'm willing to take a confirmed third line center and I'm willing to age myself 2 years. Are you willing to do that? Pending what else goes into the trade. But I'm not opposed to that. And this is what we were talking about yesterday in the program. What's the stuff that you're stapling down and you're not moving at all, and everything else you should be exploring, or at least willing to listen?
Well, I think it would speak to a couple of different things. One, it would speak to cost certainty.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it would speak to the Canucks' perception of the Western Conference right now. You talked about it being go time.
Mm-hmm.
If they make a deal like that, it's an opportunity like this isn't always sitting in front of your face. Let's give her. It would, I mean, we think the Tyler Toffoli move indicates that to a certain extent. This would be next level belief in that.
Yeah, the actions speak louder than the words, right? If you're constantly making trades to get ready. And, you know, for a hockey trade, that's more of the hockey trade than the Toffoli one, which is pure rental. This would be going for it both this year, and it does set you up to continue pushing to go forward in the future.
Some more questions pouring in. We'll try to get to them, I should say, as Canucks Central continues. It continues next with Emily Kaplan, a visit with our ESPN Hockey Insider next right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
You know, we haven't quite been running at 100%. I thought tonight that was more like, you know, the way we were playing up to that Carolina game, and I liked our energy. I thought we were a very tenacious group tonight, and, you know, it's probably unfortunate that we didn't get 2 points.
Travis Green, after the night that was, best game since Carolina, in my estimation. You? Carolina was a 4-3 shootout loss in the road, second half of back-to-backs during that road trip. I have not seen the Canucks play as good a game from start to finish, and that speaks more to what they've done than last night, but I don't see a better game in that stretch than what
I saw
last night.
The Islanders, that stretch of games there. That's fair, since Carolina. That was the Demko game, right?
That was the Demko game.
Got to get him in more often, I guess. No. Look, they've we've been preaching this over the past 2 weeks, that they have to get back to what we think they are. This reliance on Jacob Markstrom is not a good thing. While you're getting great performances, you've got to be more sound. And yesterday, they were sound. They had a foundation. They were building it off of fairly reasonable defensive play and strong offensive zone time.
Jacob Markstrom, by the way, will be just fine with not seeing Kevin Fiala again this year.
Woo! Okay.
Those two shots.
He was terrifying.
Oh, my God.
I was sitting there with walks, and every time he got the puck, it was like, oh, my God, he's got the puck again. He was everywhere.
If he wasn't going Vikings linebacker on him in the crease, he was almost taking his head off.
That too, yes.
Fiala would love to play the Canucks 82 times. He looked incredible in both of those games.
He looked like he did in that playoff series before he got hurt.
Yeah.
That's what he looked like. And the trade they made, Granlin, for that, it didn't pay immediate dividends, and maybe he just needed a lot of time to get going, whatever it is. But he looks like he's back on the trajectory of what he was supposed to become.
Good news if you're an Oilers fan or a Flames fan in the last 24 hours. There are a lot of people at this time of year, Bick, that say, you know what, I'm going to get out of Alberta. I'm going to fly somewhere else for a little while. And now apparently Mark Giordano and Connor McDavid are among them. That's welcome news in both places. Mm-hmm. Giordano, they're not sure he's going to play on the road trip, but if what Brad Treliving yesterday is to be believed, they plan on taking him on their 5-game road trip that kicks off Sunday in Detroit. And he also said, well, if there was no possibility of him playing, we wouldn't take him on the road trip. So that's obviously news for a blue line that's been hurting without Giordano and Travis Hamonic. And then news today that Connor McDavid not only skated on his own, but then joined the team for practice and is expected to go on their three-game road trip, which begins this weekend as well. They play Minnesota Friday night at home, and then they'll take off.
Now, will he play on the road trip? That's the question, right?
But I would think it's the same thing, wouldn't you? That it's, if there was no possibility he's going to play, why would we bother taking him?
Yeah, it's okay, so the possibility increases. I'd still wait to see if he dresses.
Well, maybe that has to do with results.
Yeah.
Maybe that has to do with how they're doing. But I would guess with where that team's at, and really, no matter what we may have thought about them along the way, they have been remarkably consistent over the last couple of months, man.
That's kind of the Dave Tippett effect of bringing everyone up to a baseline. And can you, you know, putter along and just pick up points as you can? And, you know, maybe they just finish at 92 points, 91 points, but the way it's going, that might be enough to get you in.
Emily Kaplan of ESPN, an opportunity to have her on again. We will always take it. Emily, thank you very much for making time. How are you?
My pleasure. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are well, and we are just a few days in advance of the trade deadline. What have you made of the week so far and the number of deals that we've seen go down?
I'm shocked by these prices for defensemen, to be quite honest. We kind of thought this was going to be a weak year at the trade deadline. There were so many teams that were on the cusp of making the playoffs, and that would probably prevent a lot of moving from happening because people didn't quite know if they were buyers or sellers. But it's kind of been the opposite effect where everyone's like, heck, we all have a chance to go in. And they've made their moves early, and these prices for defensemen especially have blown my mind. And the prices for guys with term, you know, that was the thing we heard going into it. If you've got term on your deal, that'll be huge. And, you know, look no further than that Blake Coleman trade.
Well, are you surprised that players with term have been the priority on the shopping market for GMs?
I'm not. And, you know, you heard first-round picks aren't what they used to be. It's much more important now, and they're much more valuable, and people aren't throwing them, you know, out the door. But cost certainty is so important in today's NHL, and, you know, we see it of pressure to win when you've got your star players on entry-level contracts and, you know, the pressure to win when there is a salary cap. So when you see a guy like Blake Coleman and his cap hits under $2 million, and you know you're the Tampa Bay Lightning and you've got to shed salary this summer, you've got big contract decisions to make, that makes a heck of a lot of sense. And that's why they were willing to give up not only a first-round pick, but a top prospect in Nolan Foote as well.
But that kind of works both ways, that, you know, if you have a player with term, you should be coveting it. And I guess, you know, you're being compensated with high prices, but I'm just kind of surprised that there's this much flexibility on players with term from the GM so far.
Yeah, and I think, you know, firstly, I have to applaud. I love what Tom Fitzgerald is doing because he clearly has a vision in New Jersey. And, like, I'll just speak to this trade. One of the issues I felt with Ray Shero was he didn't have a contingency plan. He went all in this summer, and he did all these pieces for them to capitalize on getting this number one pick and capitalizing the last year of Taylor Hall's contract with the team before he hits UFA status. And when it didn't work out, they didn't know what to do. And here you've got Tom Fitzgerald being like, you know what? We've got to focus on the two young players that we have that are great, Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes, and we're going to surround them with players around their age. That means that we're probably not going to be competitive in the next 2 years, and that's why they're willing to shed Blake Coleman now when his value has never been higher.
And we all know why Tampa Bay goes out and gets him. He's seen as not only a finishing piece, but he's cost certainty next year, and this is a team that has to go through an annual look at the books and, okay, who are we going to have to move on from because we've got so many good players, we've had to pay them along the way. I get why Tampa sees it's only a piece away. Maybe the favorite right now to win the Stanley Cup. I was having a conversation with someone out of Colorado yesterday, and I was surprised that his read on the Avs is that they don't necessarily see themselves as a piece away. What is your view of the Colorado Avalanche and what they might do here in the next few days?
You know, I've had a couple conversations with Nathan MacKinnon throughout the year, and he's been saying since he's been an Avalanche, and he's been around longer than we think. He's a young guy, but he's a veteran. This is the first time he felt like they legitimately had a chance at the Stanley Cup. Now, he said this all before their rash of injuries and the fact that Rantanen is out again. They're not with Kadri. They're not with Calvert. They probably need some goaltending assurance because Philip Grubauer is out as well. That worries me, but they've got a ton of cap space right now to spend. And if I'm Joe Sakic, I think I'm going all in and I'm trying to be that front runner for Chris Kreider. You know, we can make what we want of Mark Bergevin being in Denver for the last couple of days, but maybe go out and try to get Tomas Tatar or another scoring wing that can really capitalize on this group right now. I think the Metropolitan Division and really the Western Conference is wide open, and you know, there are some teams that are clear favorites, but they should be right among them. And I see them as ready to win right now and maybe just a piece away as long as they're healthy.
Well, you mentioned the Grubauer injury. Would there be any interest in one of the Chicago goalies? And just in general, how do you see that situation playing out in Chicago?
Yeah, well, I do know that if Stan Bowman is dealing one of his goalies, and it's likely going to be Robert Lehner over Corey Crawford, just because of the way that our organization does business. They're loyal. If Corey Crawford doesn't want to go, I see them letting him kind of leave this summer on his own terms. He's going to ask for a really big price, and that's a first-round pick and then some. And especially if he's doing it within the division, there's like a luxury tax that's attached to it. So I think that one's maybe a little bit more far-fetched, just because I see Joe Sakic as being a little more conservative, and if he's going to spend that big money, it's going to be on scoring help or maybe an extra defenseman or whatever it may be. As for Chicago, it's interesting. I think Stan Bowman, you know, has to weigh two things. One, what's best for his team right now, but two, what's best for them next year. And truth is, both of these guys, Corey Crawford and Robin Lehner, hit UFA status this summer. They're going to want to sign one to a long-term contract. Maybe they're going to want to go shopping for somebody else. But if you deal Robin Lehner now, you risk fracturing that relationship. And, you know, once he's in your door, it's a lot easier to convince him to, you know, lessen his term ask or whatever it may be. So that's something that I know is weighing on Stan Bowman. My gut feeling is that they keep both of these guys just because technically they are still kind of in the race, and technically they want their best chance to sign Robin Lehner this summer. I also would not be shocked if one of them goes.
Emily Kaplan of ESPN joining us here on Canucks Central. Vegas adds Alec Martinez. He'll make his debut, we assume, tonight against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Welcome to town. Take on the best team in the league, arguably, right now. Is this the kickstart that team needs to get to where we all believe it has supposed to have been all this time?
Yeah, it's a great move. You know, something I find fascinating about the Vegas Golden Knights is ever since they entered the league two and a half years ago now, they've never had a true number one defenseman. They've never had a shutdown guy. It's always been by committee. And I don't think Alec Martinez at this stage of his career is that guy. But he sure does help them. And, you know, I know that they've not been happy with the defensive group that they've had all season. They've been looking to add. I do think it's an improved group now that Peter DeBoer is the coach. I've seen a lot of improvements from them. But I do feel like this is a move that can get them further and maybe separate from the pack of the Pacific Division, which is just some buck right now.
There's a wide list of guys. I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. But, you know, of all the people that can get a move here between now and Monday, is there someone that you're looking at that's like a good buy low spot? As far as player.
Is a guy that
okay.
I'm really interested in. He's, you know, making $700,000 because of a UFA this year. He's a center, which is really hard to obtain at this point of the season. I don't think the Ducks would give him away for free, you know, or low, because they really like him. And Bob Murray, you know, he's a tough negotiator. But I feel like any team who's looking for some bottom six depth could do really well by getting Derek Grant.
Do you have a sense of what could be happening in Florida? Because they're kind of, you know, mixing two things at once here, because they have some rental pieces, but they're in a playoff chase as well. Like, how do you serve both sides of, you know, building to something greater, but also kind of making a run at it and keeping Toronto out?
Yeah, I see them in the same boat as Arizona, where there is a lot of pressure for this franchise to make the playoffs this year because of the offseason moves that they made. Remember, it's not just Joel Quenneville they got. They added a lot of pieces, from Anton Stralman to Brett Connolly to Nola Chari, because they really felt like they were ready to take that next jump. I think that they're listening on all fronts. You know, they've been putting Mike Hoffman's name out there for a while. Their asking price is probably a little too high. They don't want to get rid of him for nothing, because he's a huge part of what they do right now. But if they could get some value back, I think they would make a trade there. They've got two defensemen right now playing forward. And, you know, it's cute and it's fun when that happens. I just don't think that's sustainable. I think they'd like to get some depth. It's just a matter of what they can manage, you know, with what they have right now. So I kind of think they're not going to do anything, because they're buyers and sellers. It's kind of tricky to make hockey trades at this time of year, but we'll see.
And I guess we'll see on Toronto as well. The Maple Leafs, maybe they're just taking best practice from the Tampa Bay Lightning last year, The Lightning went through a regular season where they didn't see any adversity, and the Leafs are doing the opposite. It's adversity central. At least that's the way it feels right now. It's crazy with 20 games to go how much pressure there seems to be on that game tonight. Do you see a team that is fixable prior to the postseason should it get there?
For sure I do. And look, what's the one thing we see with all the coaches that get fired? It's goaltending that's been bad. Teams that perform poorly, goaltending has been bad. The truth is the Toronto Maple Leafs have not gotten good goaltending lately. You know, they've had to go find a new backup. Freddie Anderson is back from his injury. He doesn't quite look like himself. So that's an area where I think it's easy for them to improve. You know, Freddie Anderson, we know what he's capable of. And if he gets back into his groove, he'll be okay. That offense is just too talented to fail. They really are. And I saw so many great signs of them in the first couple weeks of Sheldon Keefe, where they really looked like they were free. They were playing more creatively. They weren't restricted by some of Mike Babcock's systems. The defense is worrisome, but let's just also remember that they've been playing without Mike Riley. So I know that Morgan Riley, rather. I know I've listed a lot of ifs, but everything could come together for this group. You're right. They are running out of time. There's only 20 games left on the season.
Maybe not whose transaction log will be the longest, but whose phone log do you think is the most? Whether they're dialing or taking calls, is there a GM that you feel like is going to be the busiest between now and Monday?
That's a great question. I have to think it's the Rangers. You know, they're kind of in the same boat as the Blackhawks, where they don't quite know what they want to do, if they want to keep some of the players around. You know, I know that they're still negotiating with Chris Kreider and seeing if he's going to stick around. But it's not just Chris Kreider, right? And look, there's plenty of teams who would give up a ton for him. Jesper Fast is a pending UFA. He could go. I think they're getting calls on some of their RFAs. You know, we know Alexander Georgiev, my gut is that they wait until the summer when they can get more for him. Tony DeAngelo, I bet some teams are asking about him. Ryan Strome, he told me he wants to stay, but because of the season he's had, I think some teams are curious about him. He becomes an RFA this summer. So I have to think Jeff Gordon is running up a phone bill.
If Strome goes, will his mother announce the lineup for another? So that was great last night. I enjoyed that.
Adorable.
It was really good. And Louis DeBrusque interviewing his son pregame, it had all the feels in the National Hockey League last night.
It really did. I've got to say, what a gutsy move by the Rangers to have their mom strip, though, right before the trade deadline, when you know you're about to make some moves. Like, these guys are comforted by their parents. At the same time, like, that's a pretty stressful time for their entire team.
Well, Minnesota was in Vancouver last night, and they're kind of going through the same thing. And people were saying, well, what if one of the guys gets traded during the dad's trip? Like, does the dad ship out, too? Like, how does that work? That's just where we're at.
Who better to have with you, though, than your parents if you get traded out?
That's so true. I mean, look, if I have the mom that's as enthusiastic as Mrs. Strome is, I'd want her around all the time. My mom's great. I love her. I just don't think she can write the lineup like that.
One quick one before I let you go, and this is off the beaten path of right now. With everything Rob Manfred's going through, we were talking about the perception of the big four commissioners right now in the NHL, and we're soliciting feedback from our listeners early in the show. Hey, where's your perception of Gary Bettman at, and how has it changed over the years? How would you answer that question, Emily? How do you see Gary Bettman now, perhaps, to the way you did 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
Yeah, well, for ranking him amongst the other three North American pro franchise commissioners, he's definitely bumped up in the power rankings by default in the last 2 weeks, because Rob Manfred's popularity cannot be any lower. I think he's really bungled this whole Astros mess. Look, I think we all view it in the same way. He's grown the game. He's gotten the game more popular. He's made the owners a lot of money. The game is a good product right now. It is safer, but there's still some glaring warts. One, he denies the connection between CT and concussions. That's really troublesome. Number two, this whole Olympic thing, that's not going away, and that's very unpopular among the players and fans. So those two things, I think, are really preventing him from being widely celebrated like an Adam Silver is. But he definitely has kept the game in a really good place and has been a good steward for the game.
Actually, really quickly before we let you go, Canucks do make a trade with Tyler Toffoli earlier this week. Just your thoughts of that trade, and was it, you know, responsibly aggressive, or might there be more to come?
It sounds like there could be more to come. You know, you keep hearing rumblings that they want Wayne Simmonds, that they need more forward depth. Look, part of me feels like this is just Jim Benning trying to save his job. He knows that he's on thin ice and he really wants to maximize it. I feel like if we were almost fooled by the fact he made this deal and then released, oh yeah, by the way, Brock Besser's injury a lot worse than we thought. at the other end of the spectrum, how valuable would it be for this young core of a Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson to get the taste of the playoffs, to understand what it takes to get there and their development? Because let's face it, like, this is a team that 2 to 3 years from now could be so talented. Their young players haven't realized their potential yet. So I think he gave up a lot just for the hope that they make the playoffs this year. And right now it's just a hope. It's not a guarantee.
Well, that was our hope, that you'd be able to join us today. And when you guaranteed that with Bick in the last hour, we were excited. Emily, thank you very much for doing this. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
Sorry, I'm always drama. I'm tough to get, but I love going up to you guys. I would always come on for Bick. You know that.
Thanks, Emily.
All right, have a good one.
That is Emily Kaplan of ESPN. Great stuff from her. I do want to get this note in before we go. Interesting junior hockey note. Looks like the QMJHL is going to vote today on increasing the penalty for fighting in that league, which would be you fight, you are done for the night.
That's interesting.
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's I think I want to see this in practice before I see this actually in season. I don't know where you would try it before that, but I understand the logic behind it. I think I want the game to go, but I'm concerned about the reaction from fans. Because I have less time for fighting than I did 10 years ago because of concussions and because I think it's overstated its impact on a game.
I've been on this bandwagon for a few years now.
Yeah.
Like other sports. Well, if you ban fighting, guess what? Banned fighting, all it means in other sports is that if you fight, you can't play the rest of the game.
Yeah.
You get to play the next one, unless your fight is so egregious that they say, we actually need to add discipline onto that because you guys went above and beyond Miles Garrett.
And I guess, okay, my reaction to it is I don't think the NHL could do it, but if it starts at the junior level and over the course of time it becomes normalized and then the NHL adopts it, different story. But, yeah, I'm at a stage of like I don't know if people pay money to go, considering how much tickets are now. I don't think people are paying money to see fourth liners fight. They're paying money to see Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, and those guys just aren't fighters.
We'll see where that vote goes today in the queue. You guys have a special guest who doesn't normally join you on Thursdays.
Yeah, Elliot Friedman, redo, coming up again tonight. Look, it's deadline week. You got to have as much Elliot as possible. He'll join us. I'm sure we'll ask him about Adam Gaudette, Victor Trocheck, all that stuff.
Hello? Hey, Elliot, it's Bick. Oh, hey, Bick.
Again?
Need to reschedule for next week? No, we didn't think your hit was very good the other day. Would you like a redo? Would you like a do-over?
He's always
Yeah, I'm
great.
Not very busy. Sure, I'll come on. That's great. It's awesome. Elliot Friedman, he is must listen. Coming up next on Reach Deep with Randeep Janda and Dom Stromatti, Jay Farrell. Going to lighten things up a little bit this afternoon. Got the comedian on their program today. Don't miss it. It's coming up next in your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.